Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Reaction Monday, powered by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling and Focus. Naturally caffeinated sparkling water with a spark. Drink Focus, P-H-O-C-U-S, drinkfocus.com. So Titan fans, and this is not unique to them, but anytime there's a big award and your player's up for it, the fans are going to get on the table and they're going to say, our guy should win this award. By the way, what happened to all that Jonathan Taylor MVP discussion? I mean, I thought 2 weeks ago, everybody and their grandma, especially the Indianapolis media, I thought they were going nuts clamoring for Jonathan Taylor to be the league's MVP. Now I don't hear that so much anymore. I don't know. And it should be noted the season's not over yet, which I also guess I get a little worked up about. But the new thing is Mike Vrabel, Coach of the Year. And it's really the local media, I think, that is just as loud, if not louder, than the fans. And they are saying that Mike Vrabel should be Coach of the Year. And we had a guy call in last hour, and he was like, the Titans get no respect, and Mike Vrabel should be Coach of the Year. And I wouldn't say that they don't get a lot of respect. It has been well documented how difficult of a year that they have had. Boomer Esiason, who, last time I checked, carries a big stick as far as the national media is concerned on CBS, Boomer Esiason highlighted that yesterday after the game.
The thing that I take out of this, and I think Ryan Tannehill said it, you know, it's resiliency, it's hanging in there, dealing with all the adversity that we've all dealt with as players and coaches. And the Titans under Mike Vrabel have shown that. And they are now the number one seed in the AFC, which is amazing when you think about the players like Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow and Mac Jones and Bill Belichick and how much that has changed over the last 4 weeks.
It's amazing when you look at it that the Titans started off and they had all these injuries and everything else, and you've got to give Mike Vrabel his due. And yeah, Vrabel's done a good job. There's no doubt about it. What's crazy for me to think about is how much better it could be if you would just beat the Jets and the Texans. If the Titans beat the Jets and the Texans and beat the Texans again, you're looking at a team, they're going to be 12-5 this year when they win this game. They were 11-5 last year. So a lot of people look at it by what were you last year and what are you this year, and that's usually how the Coach of the Year award goes. I hate to break it to you, that's usually how it goes. They were 11-5 last year, they're going to be 12-5 this year. But if you just beat the Jets and the Texans, you would have been the number one seed 2 weeks ago. I still think Vrabel should be in the mix for Coach of the Year. I'm not saying that you guys are wrong in arguing that he should be Coach of the Year. What I would say is it does feel very homerific to sit there and act as if there's no other viable candidates. So according to the latest odds, which were sent to me earlier today, the leading candidate for Coach of the Year at plus 140 is Zach Taylor of the Cincinnati Bengals. The second leading candidate, which I think is ridiculous, at plus 150 is Matt LaFleur. You can't have the league MVP do the exact same thing that they did last year, and then you get Coach of the Year. The only time that guy gets Coach of the Year, that's like Saban, and I'm not saying LaFleur is like Saban, make no mistake. But that's like Saban getting Coach of the Year in the SEC. The only time Saban gets Coach of the Year in the SEC is when there's not a guy who was coaching a horrible program last year that all of a sudden had a great season this year. If Tennessee, for example, goes 10-2 next year and wins the SEC East, and Saban goes 12-0 and wins the West, Josh Heupel will win SEC Coach of the Year ahead of Nick Saban. When I worked in women's basketball, we were in the Big East. And there was a coach by the name of, I think, Harry Perretta. And he was at Villanova. And they were horrible. And the next year, they were pretty decent. And he got Coach of the Year instead of Gino Auriemma. They just don't give it to the guy who wins all the time. So I don't think LaFleur should be there, but he is. Vrabel is third at plus 350. Nick Sirianni, fourth at plus 1200. Belichick, plus 1600. So once you get, you know, kind of past those three, it all looks like long shots there. I think each one of these guys kind of has a case. And I don't know who I, outside of LaFleur, I don't know who I am to sit there and tell you that what Zach Taylor did with the Bengals isn't more impressive or more of a big deal than Mike Vrabel. I know this. Cincinnati's got a star quarterback. They got a guy who yesterday, when I watched him play, I saw a little bit of John Elway. I saw a little bit of Tom Brady. I saw a little bit of Peyton Manning. I mean, it looked like Joe Burrow is a stone-cold killer. Joe Burrow, if he stays healthy, and you know I don't get carried away on young quarterbacks, but I think he might be a great quarterback for years and years and years. I love Herbert. Like, I love the arm, and I love the way he plays, but I'm not ready to go there with Herbert. I might be there with Burrow. Well, don't you have to look at the coach who had a horrible team his first year, drafts Joe Burrow with the first round pick, improves a little bit, and now all of a sudden is the third best team in the AFC. Don't you have to at least consider him? And again, you can want it to be Vrabel, and you can say the Titans had an all-time number of guys that played. They lost Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown. Julio Jones has been an unmitigated disaster of an acquisition. That's not the coach's fault. Working around it is the coach's fault. And the Titans are still probably going to be the number one seed in the AFC. I think it's a fair argument to make. Sirianni in Philadelphia. The guy looks like a total bozo when it comes to his press conferences. But they're in the playoffs with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. We know Jalen Hurts can't play. So he takes over an organization. They fire the coach. The quarterback begs out. So he gets sent out. They got a backup at quarterback, and they're going to make the playoffs. I could see you giving it to Sirianni. I wouldn't give it to Sirianni, but I could see it. But this is the thing that I think, I guess, I take more out of this than anything else. Is, one, I don't think Vrabel will win. I think Zach Taylor will. Two, I think before we get on the table and before we pump our chests and before we demand that the national media talk about Mike Vrabel for Coach of the Year more, like, maybe let's see if he can beat the Texans this weekend. Because that's been the problem with Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel can get the Titans jazzed up to play. Nobody thinks you've got a chance to win. Nobody thinks you should win. And they go out there and they spank the Rams on Sunday Night Football. And you've got to give him his due. That's great coaching. You lose to the Texans at home. Bad coaching. You lose to the Jets on the road. Bad coaching. You weren't prepared to play week one against Arizona. The Pittsburgh game against that horrible Steeler team, you just turn it over, turn it over, turn it over. So, as a fan, would it not be better if you were to say, hey, I think Vrabel should be in the discussion for Coach of the Year. I think Vrabel's done a lot. But this guy's got to beat the Texans before we even get there. Is that not fair to ask? Is it also not fair to say, look, Zach Taylor has done a pretty impressive job. Nick Sirianni has done an impressive job. Can we at least be open to the idea of those guys winning Coach of the Year? Again, I think Taylor's going to win it. You may get mad and say, Jared, how dare. I don't think Matt LaFleur should win it. He might. I don't think he should. He'll get votes. But I don't think Vrabel is as much of a slam dunk as everybody else is making him out to be. Here's the other part. We can sit back and talk about how he's done all of this without A.J. Brown and without Derrick Henry. Who have they beaten without those guys? Who have they beaten without A.J. Brown? They lost to the Texans. They lost to the Patriots. They lost to the Steelers. And then he came back for the 49ers.
He didn't play in the Jets game, did he?
He did not play in the Jets game. So that was one that they lost without him. But who have they beaten without A.J. Brown? When we, rise up and throw our hands in the air and say, look at what Vrabel has done without A.J. Brown. No, they had A.J. Brown for that rough stretch when they went and beat the Bills and beat the Colts and beat the Chiefs and beat the Rams. And by the way, A.J. dominated three of those four games. Absolutely dominated. AJ was there when they beat San Francisco. AJ was there when they beat the Saints. AJ was there when they beat the Dolphins. Corey Curtis brought this up a couple of weeks ago when he was on the show News 2, and he brought it up again when I was on his show on News 2, and he was like, I think AJ Brown might be more important than Derrick Henry. And I thought that was crazy, and I still kind of do, because, I mean, I think Derrick might be one of the most valuable and best players in the NFL. But I understand the point now. They're a different team when AJ Brown's out there. And AJ got hurt in that Texan game, and Ian brought up the Jets game, and they lost those games without him. But we can't sit here and say, I mean, look at all the injuries for him to do this without AJ Brown when they're winning most of the games with AJ Brown. That's all I'm saying as far as the AJ thing's concerned. The reason the Titans won the division, as much as we want to commend them and pat them on the butt for the job that they've done without Derrick Henry, the reason they've won the division is because they beat Seattle because of Derrick Henry. They beat Indianapolis because of Derrick Henry. They beat Buffalo because of Derrick Henry. They beat the Chiefs with Derrick Henry. They won all those games except for the Rams. They won all those games because of Derrick Henry. And I told you, I was done with the division after the second Colts win. It was going to be impossible, in my estimation, for Indianapolis to catch up. And they tried. But they didn't come very close. So I guess this is like a long, drawn-out way of me just telling you all, like, I get your point. I do. I get your point on Vrabel. If they gave it to Vrabel, you would not hear a complaint from me. I think it's well-deserved if he gets it. But let's just be honest with the season they've had, and let's be open to the fact that the Bengals have been, you know, horse manure for the last 6 years, and now they got a quarterback, and they look like a pretty good team, and they just beat the Chiefs. And that's how this league works. That's how voting for stuff works in this league. The more important element of this, that is more important than a shiny award that you give Vrabel, that even if he won, you'd be like, Mike, you won Coach of the Year. Your thoughts? Yeah, you know, man, I guess I'm just really focused right now on getting ready for the next game. You know, it's a good honor for a lot of players around here. And, okay. You know, like, that's how he's going to react to it. So the bigger thing here is that I think Vrabel has coached as far as game plans are concerned, and this is now becoming a recurring thing. I think Vrabel's coached his butt off this year. I thought that game plan against Kansas City was excellent. I thought the game plan at New England in a loss was fantastic. I thought yesterday they just put the game on Tua. They just said, you know what? And I'll give you an example of this. Early in the game, they recover the fumble from Tua. It's starting to rain. They're up 7-0. They've moved the ball effectively enough, and it's 4th and short. And you can go for it. This isn't the Charger coach going for it on 4th and goal from the 5 to open the game. This was a 4th and goable. And even me, who's very anti-go for it, I was kind of like, well, and I tweeted out, I'd kick it reluctantly. I want a 2-score game in the rain with Tua because I got to make Tua beat me. If Tua goes out there and Tua throws for 350 yards, then we will shake his hand and move on. And that was Vrabel's game plan. And Tua couldn't handle it. So they kicked the field goal, went up 2-0. Now Tua's down 2 scores in the rain. Vrabel's game plans this year have been excellent. Vrabel's feel for the game has been excellent. We sit here and laugh when Harbaugh goes for it at every opportunity he gets. He goes for it on 4th and 1 against the Titans, doesn't get it. Khalif Raymond touchdown the next play. We laugh at him when he goes for it on 4th and short, doesn't get it. Derrick Henry 70 yards on the next play. Goodbye 14-2 Ravens. Goes for 2 every time at the end of the game. Doesn't matter if it's Lamar against the Steelers or if it's Tyler Huntley versus the Packers. They go for it every time. And so we laugh at these guys. But remember that Vrabel was very much a Johnny go for it his first year. And every time it was like this false bravado that he had as far as proving to the players that was like, hey, I believe in my guys and I want my guys to know we can win the game. Well, he stopped doing that. They score at the end against Seattle, kick the field goal, go to overtime, win the game. He stopped doing that. Going for two against the Chargers in London his first year. He's not doing that anymore. Kicks the field goal, goes up to the feel for the game, which no computer nerd sitting at, you know, at their desktop that will sit there, well, according to the expected output of points per nine.com, you know, I mean, it's a no. Vrabel, who played the game with a lot of feel, and I thought did a great job doing that, Vrabel is now starting to coach the game with a lot of feel. So as far as coach of the year, I understand if he doesn't get it, and I'm not going to complain. But I am telling you that right now his game planning has been great, and his feel for the game this year has been great. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Now, just get the quarterback to not turn over the ball. That's all I'm asking for the next three games to try to get to the Super Bowl. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your phones on this next. Plus, one thing about these AFC quarterbacks, we'll get into that as well. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. This is my fourth year using Hiller at my home, and I absolutely adore them. Actually, it'll be my fifth. Goodness gracious. Where does the time go? I absolutely love using Hiller. Anytime I have an issue, Hiller comes out to the house. They take excellent care of it, and I never have to see them again. Happy you'll be, or the service is guaranteed. That is their guarantee. Happy you'll be, or the service is free. To help customers tackle necessary replacements, Hiller is extending their lower 2021 pricing through the end of this year. This is the lowest pricing expected all year. You've noticed all the inventory shortages and empty shelves, and now there are serious shortages on equipment and products for your home. HVAC systems, tankless water heaters, generators are all going to be extremely limited in 2022. And because of the supply issues and rising costs of parts, manufacturers are rapidly increasing the price of this equipment. If you need a replacement, call my friends at Hiller today. Don't wait until you're out of options. Hiller's work is backed by the Happy You'll Be, or services free guarantee. Learn more at happyhiller.com. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. My guy's proud supporter of the Preds, the Vols, and Vandy. Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Hey, Mike. Several guys yesterday talked about the accomplishment of winning the division and getting back to the playoffs and how this is the new standard around here, but that they're not done yet. I'm just curious from your perspective, do you feel that you guys have elevated the standard in the last couple of years? And is that, I guess, kind of a good thing that, you know, it's no longer just new or novel to get to the playoffs or win the division, but they're looking for more?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're always looking for more. I mean, that's our goal, is to win championships. And it starts with winning the division. Guys were excited. They put a lot into it. I'm happy for them, but you know, this is a huge week. This is another critical week, and we'll treat it all the same way. You know, but for some guys on our football team, this is be the first chance that they have of playing a playoff game in the National Football League eventually. Or some guys have already come up and told me this is their first winning season that they've been a part of. And, you know, they just appreciate, you know, the type of football team and the type of organization that we have.
This will be Mike Vrabel's fourth season finale. He has never walked into the season finale with a playoff spot clinched until now. That is new. That is out there as well. Now, I will say this as I talk about how, you know, the local media thinks Vrabel should be coach of the year. The fans think Vrabel should be coach of the year. And I'm not against it. You know, Vrabel coach of the year, fine. Got no problem with it. I haven't even thought about the NFC. I'm not giving it to Matt LaFleur. I mean, that's ridiculous. I am not giving. He's got the best player at quarterback in the league. He won the league MVP last year. They were the number one seed. They lost in the playoffs. Now they're doing the exact same thing again. I'm going to give him coach of the year? Because your quarterback lied to the media about having COVID or getting his vaccine or whatever? Like, what? No. I'm not giving it to him. But when I worked in Louisville, we had acquired a radio station, 93.9 The Ville. And there was a deal with Louisville that I wasn't really a fan of, but I got caught up in. So they make this deal, the radio station, and it would be like if we bought another radio station, like we made 94.9 an all Predators, all day station with the Predators, and it was like the Preds official podcast on a loop. But instead, it was like programming. And so it's like, you know, one day we had an argument. And it was, I mean, I think it's well established. I'm a pretty big fan of Nick Saban, right, Ian?
I'd say that's probably fair. Okay. Fairly established, yes.
Now, this was before I knew Nick, but I think Nick Saban, I just think he hangs the moon. So one day I'm talking about how much I love Nick Saban or whatever, and some guy calls in and goes, I'd rather have Bobby Petrino than Nick Saban. I'm like, okay. So the host, who was the guy that we had to hire as part of this Louisville radio station deal, starts going on this rant about how he thinks Bobby Petrino is a better coach than Nick Saban. He goes, I'll take Bobby Petrino any day over Nick Saban. I thought, these people are on crack. I'm like, what have I got myself into? What is going on here? Oh, my God. And that literally was a two-hour show. And the amount of callers that were like, oh, yeah, Bobby Petrino is better than Nick Saban. I mean, it floored me. I don't think it's crazy to say this. I think where Vrabel is right now as a coach, if he goes up against Zach Taylor in the playoffs, if he goes up against Sean McDermott in the playoffs, if he goes up against Bill Belichick or Andy Reid in the playoffs, I feel comfortable with Vrabel game planning, and right now I feel comfortable with his game management. Now, Andy completely outcoached him in the AFC title game 2 years ago. Floyd was the one that pointed that out to us, that Andy was worried about Derrick Henry keeping the game close, so he decided to take the air out of the football and run it, and the Titans didn't make an adjustment. And the Titans were the ones that panicked. That was Andy getting the best of Vrabel. It happens. Andy's a Hall of Fame coach. But I don't think it's homerific to say the way Vrabel is coaching right now that you should feel comfortable with him going up against these coaches in the AFC. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Keith in Bowling Green texts in and says, Zach Taylor is a terrible game coach that got lucky yesterday. I'll be the first to admit I don't watch a lot of Bengal football, so I'm not going to be one to be able to comment on his game coaching. I will say this. I didn't love what Zach Taylor did at the end of the game yesterday, but I understood it. He was scared to death of Patrick Mahomes. And I get it. You know, John Harbaugh goes for it against Aaron Rodgers with a backup quarterback. I'm fine with that. But it doesn't justify what you did 2 weeks before when you had Lamar Jackson against the Steelers and went for it. But I was watching Zach Taylor on that fourth down, and I was like...
The end of that game got wild, didn't it? Last little bit there. And so, going up against Mahomes with time left and trying to figure that whole situation out, I mean, that has got to be tough. Do you score a touchdown? Do you give him too much time? Do you hold it for the field goal? Do you go for it? It was a lot to handle.
Remember when Vrabel's explanation for going for it in that Charger game 3 years ago was, well, I've seen Phillip Rivers too many times giving him time to come back and beat you and this, that, or the other. And I thought that was so foolish. I'm like, no. Sometimes you have to make the other team's quarterback beat you. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. Like, this is the league. When I saw Mahomes standing there on the sidelines and you got two timeouts and a minute left and he's got that big coat on, I'm like, I don't know if I'm giving the ball to that guy, because if that guy gets the ball, he might, I understood what Taylor did. I wouldn't have done it. I would have done the first sneak with Burrow short to make him use that first timeout. Then I'm trying to score a touchdown. And then because now, like, look, Mahomes is going to have his timeouts. At some point, you're going to have to ask your defense to get a stop. Worked out for him. Let's go to your phones. Angel has been waiting patiently and is up next. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Angel.
Hey, what's up, Jared? Tighten up. Good win yesterday. I was there, and the weather didn't get as ugly as I wanted it to, because with two. First off, man, they was just doing so much uncharacteristic stuff. I got some fans, some friends that are Dolphins fans, and Tua is not a guy that's supposed to be pushing the ball down 30, 40-yard passes and all that.
Tua stinks.
Yeah, so when they started doing that, I'm like, man, they're really trying us. And we left about three interceptions out on the field. That should have been easy picks.
I mean, Hooker left that one that hit him right in the hands. That, by the way... That's 2 weeks in a row now that the Titans have had a ball hit them square in the hands and haven't picked it off, and that's got to change. Because if Joe Burrow throws you one of those in the playoffs, that's got to be had.
And that's exactly what my point was getting to, Jared, is if it would have been a more accurate quarterback that can throw in some tight windows, he would have tore us up yesterday, because there were some passes Tua just missed. They smacked some receivers just in one hand. And I'm just glad it got nasty and the boys won, man. We got one more game left. Tighten up. I'm going to hang up and listen, Bubba.
Thank you, Angel. By the way, I don't know what you guys thought about this. The Devontae Parker non-pass interference on fourth down subsequent penalty, I thought that one was ridiculous. I thought that was clear pass interference. And I couldn't believe they didn't call that. I think the reffing stinks just across the board in the league. And I unless it's the Titans and it costs the Titans the Super Bowl, I hope the Super Bowl is decided on a controversial bad call, because then the league will have to address it. Right? The league has ignored it. How bad the officiating has been this year. It's been terrible. It's been terrible in the Titans' favor, like the Saints game. It's been terrible against the Titans, like the Steelers game. I mean, I think I'm just calling it both ways here. But it's been so bad. I thought that Parker one was awful. As far as the caller's point about if it's a better quarterback and it's not Tua, yeah, you're not going to win by 30 points. And they will make some throws. And you're most likely, your road is probably going to be either Belichick and Mac Jones in the first game or Josh Allen in the first game. And the second game's either going to be, if you get to a second game, the AFC title game here, it's either going to be Mahomes or Burrow. And those are the three best quarterbacks in the AFC. And they will play better than Tua did yesterday. My thing is, I think your defensive line can get to all three of those quarterbacks. And when you do get to all three of those quarterbacks, I will see how well they play. You know, they will score some points. But if you spend a lot of money on this line, and if those guys can get to that quarterback, that's going to change it all. The Titans in 99 won their first game against Buffalo in the Music City Miracle. They went to Indianapolis and beat the Colts because they got to Peyton Manning. They hit him the entire game because they had Curse and they had Josh Evans and they had Kenny Holmes and they had, you know, a solid rotation of defensive linemen that could get there. We're right back to your phones. I see them next. I will get to them. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Right to your phones on a Reaction Monday live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 1025 The Game.
Home field advantage hasn't been quite as strong this season with teams able to go on the road and win all across the league this year. You all are 7-2 at home this season, among the tied for the best record in the AFC. What has made it so tough to, you know, for home teams to hold their home fields? And what is it that makes it good? You know, why would it be good for you guys to be able to have home field advantage throughout the postseason?
Well, I mean, just historically, as a young player coming into this league, I was taught that you got to win the games in the division, you got to win your home games, and you got to steal a couple on the road, and I think that remains to be true. I don't know why the numbers are what they are, Teresa. I haven't tried to study them other than, you know, playing well or turnovers or things that normally get you beat in any location. And I think our fans have been fantastic. I think they've been unbelievable. The support that we've had, you know, I hope that they get on a plane and they go down and they support us in Houston. We've had, you know, great number of fans travel with us on the road, LA and, you know, Seattle and these different places and Indianapolis to, you know, to watch us play. So hopefully that they'll continue the excitement and help us this week as we travel on the road to try to get a, you know, a road victory.
There you go. That was Vrabel. And you know Vrabel doesn't want to get too ahead of home field because they got to win this week against the Texans. There's a weird scenario. Titans lose, Chiefs lose, Bengals win. Bengals are the one seed. Anywho, let's go back to your phones. As promised, Reaction Monday, powered by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling and Focus, naturally caffeinated sparkling water with a spark. Drinkfocus.com. By the way, before I go back to the phones, Ian, I don't feel like we've talked enough about the Dolphins game for a Reaction Monday. I just don't think there's much to talk about. That team stunk. Titans took care of business. That's what the Titans need to do against teams like that.
That's fair? Correct. Yeah. I mean, that's what you want to see. You want to see them take care of business. I mean, when you see on the scroller 34-3, you always like to see that.
Good enough for me. Missy has been waiting patiently and is up next on Mike Vrabel. Thank you for calling the show. Go ahead, Missy.
Hey, Jared, how you doing?
Good.
Happy New Year.
You too.
Here, can you hear me okay?
Yep, go ahead.
All right, cool. I think another point about Vrabel this year is that his player preparation's been way better than it has been in the past. Like, he's taken them from a crappy first half and gotten them to play like a playoff team in the second half, like in the San Francisco game. I think he's done a much better job at having them prepared and changing their mindset throughout the game.
So I would agree with you, except for it's been the opposite. Like, it was the opposite for the Steeler game. And
well, that was also the refs, too, you know. That was terrible.
Like, yeah, was terrible. I mean, game. I hear you on that.
And I'm not saying he's great. He's just better. He's better than he has been.
I do appreciate your call. I think game planning and adjustments to those, thank you for your call, Missy. I think that that's been decent so far this year. You know, the one thing that's funny is I really don't like Todd Downing. Like, I'm trying to be, you know, look, they just smoked Miami, and there's really nothing to complain about. And I am not a huge Todd Downing fan. Like, if things didn't get better, or if the playoffs are an unmitigated disaster this year, and Tannehill throws for like 73 yards and three picks or something bad, Downing could lose his job because they could pin the fact that, well, when Arthur was here, Tannehill was this good, but now with Downing. But like even yesterday, early in the game, it was 3rd and 1 on the second drive, and the Titans run the ball right up the middle with Foreman, which I love to run the ball. But like, if you're going to call the obvious play in that situation, just bring the fullback into the game and let him be a lead blocker. Because the line, you know, they ran blitz on that play, Miami did. And so the line parted like the Red Sea. And all of a sudden, up came the linebacker unblocked. And he just smacked Foreman backwards for a loss of 2. I'm like, are we making the obvious play calls here? Like, come on. And there have been a lot of situations like that where, like, it's a 4th down or a 3rd down, and there's a lot of options open to Downing, and they don't really take them. And that has bothered me some. I'm not a huge Downing guy. As far as Vrabel in the middle of games this year, it hasn't stuck out to me. I mean, I think the game planning has been pretty good. The only game where I thought they just got absolutely drilled by the opposing coaching staff was actually a game they won, and that was the Saints. That was when Trevor Siemian came in here and threw for like 350. And that game, I was like, dude, Sean Payton went at Chris Jackson on every play. Now, the week before, I thought they totally smoked McVay. So it's crazy, right? Like, how did Vrabel do coaching this year? Well, I think he out-coached Bill Belichick. I think he out-coached Sean McVay. I think he out-coached Andy Reid. I think he out-coached, okay, yeah, not Sean Payton, got the better of him. Did he lose? Nope, he won. Titans and Truth, Chris has been waiting patiently. Thank you for calling the show. The floor is yours, Chris.
Well, thank you, Jared. All good to hear you. Happy New Year, by the way.
You too.
Yes, so I agree with you on the game planning. I think Vrabel has done a very good job as far as that, because like you said, the New England game, I think the game planning was good. The only thing was, if we don't have those two fumbles, we probably win that game, or it's at least a very different ball game. And I think the same thing with Pittsburgh. Vrabel should be definitely the front runner for Coach of the Year. And of course, the national media is probably not going to do that because, like you said, we're not the flashy, we're not the high-scoring as Cincinnati, Kansas City. You know, they're not going to talk about us in that light. And again, Shane Bowen, I got to keep giving him the biggest apology of all time, because, like many, I was out on Bowen the second he got named, and I'm thinking, man, was I dumb for thinking that. Shane Bowen has done a very good job with this defense, completely turned it around. Love it. Take care of business against the Texans. Get this number one seed. Because like you said, home field advantage is important and it matters. And offense can sell tickets, but we've seen the Super Bowls. Defense wins championships. And so everybody have a happy New Year.
I think the bigger thing, you too, Chris, thank you for your call. Like, I'm not ready, and I was a huge, huge Bowen detractor. I am not ready to just turn around and do a 180 on Bowen. I'm not ready, and I'll tell you why. Because I was thinking about this today. The Titans, now, if you want to point the finger at Robinson for Clowney and Beasley, you can. Because those two were terrible, especially Clowney. And I point the finger at Vrabel on that one, because Vrabel had obviously coached him before, and I think there was probably like a feeling of, oh yeah, you know, Mike knows him, and, you know, like if Mike said to John, no, I don't want Clowney, then Mike would have had no interest in going out and acquiring Clowney. I think my bigger thing, though, here is what the Titans missed on last year is what they hit on this year. Autry and Dupree. Now, again, I don't know the Metro Nashville Scoop Nashville report about Bud Dupree at that Walgreens in North Nashville. I have no idea what that's going to yield. And again, it kind of drives me a little bit crazy that we have to talk about it anyways. But I guess we have to. But this group, I mean, they're awesome. And it's such a different defense when Dupree's out there. When Dupree's not out there, Trevor Siemian throws for 350 yards. When Dupree's out there, the Chiefs score 3 points. Seems simple to me. But as far as personnel is concerned, in the secondary, Malcolm Butler's not there. Adoree Jackson played the end of last year, and for some reason the Giants gave him a ridiculous contract. But those two guys aren't there, and neither is Kenny Vaccaro. They replaced those guys with kind of like some journeymen. Jackrabbit, Buster Screen. They, you know, bumped Amani Hooker up, so now Dane Cruikshank plays. Nothing special there. And yet the defense is just so much better. What? I don't think that's a coaching thing. I think that is the fact that they went out and they got some mean dudes in the front seven. Autry and Dupree, and to a lesser extent, Naquan Jones. They got rid of guys that weren't doing anything. Clowney, Beasley, Daquan Jones, and they replaced them with guys that can play. And if you've got a defensive line, see, this is the thing that I laugh about when I hear the analytic guys try to make claims. Well, you know, they lost Kenny Vaccaro, but they added Danico Autry, so it's a wash. It is never a wash when it's a good defensive lineman and a good safety. It's never a wash. Defensive line is so much more important, especially in the NFL. But you think it's an accident that Nick Saban has had the best defensive line in college football for the last 15 years? I don't. By the way, the 1 year that Clemson absolutely smoked Alabama, go look at that defensive line for Clemson. Christian Wilkins, who I thought was a mean boy yesterday for Miami, Christian Wilkins, Cleland Farrell, who went fourth overall in the draft, I mean, just loaded on that defensive front of Clemson. Every other year, Alabama's got the best defensive line. Did you see the defensive line for Georgia the other day? I mean, look at these pass rushers that are in the college football playoff. All of the teams have good ones, especially Georgia and Alabama. So I can't do the 180 on Bowen. I know a lot of you want to do the 180 on Bowen. I can't do the 180 on Bowen. I'm just not completely there yet. Ben from Nashville says, hey, Jared, one thing about the Dolphins game, what do you think the impact of any will there be with the loss of Michael Pruitt? I think the tight ends looked pretty good this weekend, but as someone who hates Jeff Swaim, I'm nervous with going forward with just Firkser and Swaim. They'll go get another replacement-level guy. He won't be as good as Pruitt, and he won't be as acclimated with the offense and the quarterback as Michael Pruitt was, but they'll go get another replacement-level guy. And again, the playoffs are not going to be decided. You know, like when NBC used to have the NBA, and boy, that theme music was great. But when the NBA used to have, NBC used to have the NBA, they would be like, you know, it's game three between Shaq and the Lakers and Karl Malone and the Jazz. And they'd always pump the stars, Jordan and Pippen and Olajuwon and Barkley and just all Reggie Miller. I mean, like they would pump them all. That's who decides the playoffs. I know John Paxson hit some shots. I know Steve Kerr hit some shots. Michael decides the playoffs. For the Titans, it's going to be A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, Bud Dupree. That's who decides the playoffs. The stars. The impact players. No disrespect to Michael Pruitt. They got him off the Texans practice squad. He played well for them for 3 years. They let him go. He goes to San Francisco, gets cut before the season, comes back. That's a replacement-level guy. That's why we always talk about with the Predators. They got to get a big boy forward before they can win the Cup. Well, you know, the Predators are playing great this year. Yes, they are. They're fun to watch. They got to get a big boy forward if they want to win the Cup. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We will wrap this show up next. And I will just say this. Because it's going to be a big story surrounding the Titans tomorrow, plus Monday Night Football, and they flexed some games. So we'll get our thoughts in on that as well. Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and as always, we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Do you guys plan to open a practice window for Derek this week?
Yeah, we've discussed it. We'll see where that goes. You know, he's doing some work today, and you know, we'll see when that window opens, and probably make a decision midweek.
Anybody else hear that from Mike Vrabel today and think, what did he just say? Because I felt that way today. Because every time Vrabel's, you know, hey, what do you think about? Yeah, you know what? See who's out there Wednesday. Okay. And he's asked about Derek, and, well, you know, we're kicking it around. And we're, what? What? Okay. All right. So, I believe Derrick Henry, this will be the biggest story this week. I believe that Vrabel wouldn't have said that if Derrick Henry wasn't going to be back at practice on Wednesday. That's just my take. I have no inside sourcing on it. I think Derrick Henry's back at practice on Wednesday. Does it mean he's activated for Sunday? I don't know. But I do think that's the biggest story this week. We will be following that. I heard the midday show today. Darren just believes like, oh, I wouldn't play him no matter what. I'm like, oh, I mean, you know, there are some qualifying factors here. So the NFL has implemented their flex scheduling for week 18. Now, I like week 18 because week 18 is an extra week during the calendar year that I get to talk football with you. There's 52 weeks out of the year. And, you know, if all goes to plan with the Titans, we're going to get to talk football this extra week. So this is an 18th week of talking about games. Then we're going to get a 19th off week about talking about games. Then we're going to get at least one more to make it 20. I mean, pretty soon if the Titans get to the Super Bowl, we're going to spend half the year breaking down games. And I kind of like it. That's selfish. But I think the idea of week 18 is more exciting than the actual games. They flex two for Saturday. Chiefs, Broncos, Eagles, Dallas, seen enough Eagles, seen enough Dallas, seen enough Broncos on TV. They got to start getting these bad quarterbacks off television. And I know it's hard, but like yesterday, if you lived here, you didn't get Chiefs and Bengals. And that was a great game. That game should have been Sunday Night Football. And I know the big teams, the Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bays, the Dallases, I know they rate higher. But as far as the game is concerned, that should have been Sunday Night Football. Not Sean Mannion on Sunday Night Football. Not Drew Locke flexed into this main game. No thank you for that. Though I am excited about the Week 17 or the Week 18 finale, which will be the Raiders and the Chargers. That's good. I think the thing is, when they gave ESPN this doubleheader, they thought to themselves, this is going to be great. Because there's going to be all these different games that matter. But when they're all divisional games, some of these teams are going to stink. So if they had Titans-Colts last game of the year, then that they could have put on TV and flexed into it. But because instead, it's Titans-Texans-Colts-Jags, you can't put those games on TV. So I think what the NFL needs to do is they need to move away from the automatic divisional games at the end of the year if they want to make week 18 this awesome spectacle of games with, you know, a national game, and then your Sunday, your 3:30 Sunday with playoff implications, and then your Sunday night finale. There's just not enough there. I don't want to watch Drew Locke play Kansas City. We see them play Kansas City all the time. It doesn't do much for me. Preds Insiders, Robbie Stanley is taking it away next. We're out of here. We'll be back. Hopefully Caroline will be back with us. We hope she's doing well. Caroline will hopefully be back with us tomorrow. If not, we'll see you at 2.